What's going on, CJ? Thanks for doing this as always. Are the Canucks for real? Are you ready to say that they are?
Well, I hate to agree with Randeep because it happens so infrequently, but I am not quite there myself. And you know, look, there's nothing even to really take them apart over. It's been an impressive start. I think that road trip was very encouraging. But, you know, with this next stretch of games coming up that looks pretty tough, you know, I think we'll know a lot more in 3 weeks' time or so about where this team is at. And you know, for me, it's not just seeing them do it against quality opponents, but it's over a little bit more period of time before we're pronouncing them for real. But, you know, I'm quite confident saying this team's clearly taken steps from the one last year. I do feel that they're definitely going to be more competitive down the stretch, but I just need to see a little bit more before I buy in, go all in on the Canucks are for real game.
CJ, it's okay to excuse me. It's okay to be agreeing with me. It's there's nothing to be ashamed of here.
Well, it just doesn't happen very much. So I'm a little confused by standing on the same platform as you.
I do it all the time. Lots of disagreements, but hey, that's what I guess sports radio is all about. So we see Elias Pettersson. He just got first star of the week. Yeah, the kid has taken a step further, a lot further than I would have expected to see already this season. But are we ready to look at this guy as maybe a top 15 scorer as early as this year, CJ?
Yeah, I think that's very fair. I mean, if you look, you know, obviously there's a blip at the end of last season where, you know, he hit a bit of a wall in terms of his production in March and into April. But, you know, across the totality of what we've seen for him as an NHL player, you know, I think it's fair to project him in that category. You know, this last 10 or 12 games has been particularly impressive. You know, I think the way that the Canucks drive play when he's on the ice, you know, stands out as a positive. You know, you probably still like to see him shoot a little bit more if you're looking to quibble, but, you know, this is just an elite gifted offensive player. You know, tremendous hand-eye, as we saw in that goal in San Jose on Saturday. And, you know, I do think that we've just seen more and more players his age jump into the top 20 scorers that you know, I comfortably put him in that position if we're projecting a fully healthy season and, you know, plays most of the games. I don't think that's something we have to wait 2 years to see. I do think that he's ready to produce like that now, and you're seeing it in the underlying numbers, and obviously a pretty good stretch here of production that earned him that first star of the week nod.
Well, we've been talking about the Canucks and you know, general optimism here in this city. And you mentioned the schedule. You mentioned seeing a little bit more consistency throughout the season. But if there's one thing that surprised you about this team and something you weren't expecting, what would that be specifically?
Probably the JT Miller, you know, the way that's gone with him. You know, not that I was down on him by any means, but, you know, in the past when he's had the kind of stretches that he's had, it seemed like, you know, he had the particular line mates that were maybe doing some of the work for him. But, you know, I think that addition is really paid dividends early in the year. And you know, he just looks to my eye, you know, the old dreaded eye test, as though someone who's really fit in quite nicely. And you never know, you know, with teams. I mean, you know, a lot of teams, you know, add players over the offseason and it doesn't work out. Or even a team like Vancouver, you're projecting, okay, all the young guys are going to get a little bit better. Well, that doesn't always happen. And you know, so I think the way that, you know, a team that had, you know, fairly busy offseason has gelled together, and specifically JT Miller is someone that I look at as someone who's been a pleasant surprise, just because, you know, a month into your time with a new team, you're not always feeling comfortable or clicking or, you know, have found your place yet. And you know, I think in his case, clearly he has.
Chris Johnston, our guest here on Reach Deep. You hear him every Monday after 3 o'clock, and check out his column on Sundays, Beyond Headlines, up at sportsnet.ca. And we've had a lot of talks about goaltending here, CJ, and even with Markstrom and Demko, the split so far this season has been very strong for the Canucks. But something you mentioned in Beyond Headlines about the way the Bruins use Tuukka Rask and Yaroslav Halak basically is almost a little bit more than a 50-50 split in favor of Rask, but it could be an eye towards the future, maybe the future of ways teams use their goaltending.
Well, the way I look at it is if every team could have this, they would have it. I mean, I think that this is the ideal, the gold standard for what you want to have as an organization, obviously because of the cap and just the fact there probably aren't 62 high-level goaltenders, you know, to go around. So I don't know that every team and have two players as strong as Black and Rask have been, you know, keeps other organizations from doing this. But, you know, in speaking with Tuukka Rask a little bit, you know, he really believes the strong playoffs he had last year were directly due to the fact he only played 46 games in a regular season. That was his fewest number of starts in a full 82-game season since basically he was the backup to Tim Thomas. And he just thought when it came to playoff time that that had him physically and mentally in a better position to be at his best. And you know, frankly, if Boston wins Game 7 against St. Louis last June, you know, I think he would have been the Conn Smythe Trophy winner for the Bruins. So, you know, the fact that they have these two goaltenders that they more or less give like a 52-48 split to, you know, I think is a huge bonus. You know, in speaking with Bruce Cassidy, the Bruins coach, he said that really they don't even tailor it to the strongest opponent. It's all just about trying to keep a steady workload for both guys. You know, they don't have a certain formula for back-to-back, so they don't look, you know, Tuukka Rask has had all the success at Madison Square Garden. He gets a start against the Rangers. You know, they almost view them as equal players, you know, as I said, with a slight nod to Rask in terms of the number of starts he gets. And, you know, I do think that's the way of the future. It's just been so long since you've seen guys that can play 65 or 70 games and then go on and play another 20 to 25 in the playoffs and you know, win a Stanley Cup. But, you know, I think that the load management, if you want to call it that, has come to goaltending. And, you know, it's not something that every team can do because they don't have two good goaltenders. But, you know, right now I think the Bruins are the epitome of it. You know, Halak is out of a contract this year. Rask is out of a contract next year, so it's probably not going to last forever. They're going to have to find some other solutions going forward. But, you know, to my eye, the Bruins are probably the strongest team to start the year in the NHL. And I think the fact that they have two goaltenders that can play at that level is a huge reason why they've been able to get there.
Yeah, it's a pretty fascinating conversation because once you look at the economics of the situation as well, what does it mean for the position? Does it mean, you know, there could be impact on term and an annual average based on this tendency? As you mentioned, a lot of teams want to do this. Whether they're able to is a different story. But how do you think the PA feels about this, what it means for the position?
Well, I mean, it's tricky on a few levels. I think a lot of teams are scared to pay a goaltender top dollar as it is. You know, there's only a handful of guys that are making even $8 million, let alone the Carey Price number, 10.5. And so I think as a general rule, teams are a little scared off by you know, paying goalies among the best in the league. And in part because the goaltender, you know, performance is seems to be a little bit more unpredictable. I mean, lots of very good goaltenders have off years. And if you invest to that degree in them, it can literally impact whether you make the playoffs or not. So, you know, the search is always out there. And, you know, I just don't know that anyone's ever going to be able to, I mean, this will be the gold standard. This will be the ideal, but it's not always going to work in this way. I mean, even someone like Jaroslav Halak, he's been a number one in the league. You know, the fact that he came to Boston on a pretty reasonable deal and that he bought into this as someone who in the past has carried the load of starts during his time in St. Louis and even the Islanders after that, you know, that's kind of rare in itself, but, you know, that you find someone willing to buy into this system who has the pedigree that he has. But, you know, I think essentially teams are probably not going to spend huge dollar on their goaltending in general if they can. You know, every once in a while, if you have a top player or, you know, if Bobrovsky hits the open market and you're Florida and you really are desperate to you know, find an answer at that position, you're going to see the big dollars handed out to them. But, you know, I think in general, goalies are going to be more middle of the road players and, you know, teams are going to try to get two of them when they can. And, you know, obviously one solid guy at minimum.
We were hearing that Taylor Hall and his agents are going to have a conversation with the New Jersey Devils as they come out for a West Coast trip here. But how much is the start to this season potentially affected Taylor Hall's future in New Jersey?
It's probably going to be the final straw, so to speak. You know, I don't know what – it would be tough to put odds on what his chances of staying in New Jersey were in general, but I wouldn't have had them too high, you know, maybe a bit above 50-50, but not much more than that. And, you know, really at this stage of Taylor Hall's career, I mean, look, he wasn't part of winning teams in Edmonton. You know, he had the one great year in New Jersey where he won the Hart Trophy two seasons ago and the team had a pretty unexpected run to a playoff spot. But, you know, this isn't a guy that's had the chance to play on a lot of great teams. And so, you know, I think when you look at his free agency, he's going to be one of the, if not the marquee name, certainly one of the one, two or three names out there on July 1st. And so, you know, I think that this will impact his decision in the sense that, you know, probably the team's going to move on from him. You know, if they're not in a hunt for a playoff spot, if they continue the way they started the year. And, you know, I just don't see him committing to them at this point in time. I mean, look, stranger things could happen. Maybe something happens in that meeting between Darren Ferris and Ray Shiro this week in Calgary. But, you know, it does feel as though this is headed towards a guy that's going to be moved, you know, at some point before the trade deadline in February. And you know, we'll probably even test for agency, depending on where he ends up as part of that deal. And you know, it's kind of a once-in-a-lifetime chance for Taylor Hall. You know, I think he wants to be at a winner. Obviously, he's in a good position, I think, to cash in, assuming he has, you know, a healthy season this year and a similarly productive season to what we've seen the last couple of years. And you know, the fact that the Devils maybe have stumbled out of the gates might make it a little easier for them, too, you know, not to commit that kind of money to him that he's going to be able to get somewhere else and you know, try to get some assets back for him in the shorter term.
Well, if he is available at the trade deadline, you know there's going to be teams lining up to try to get him. But also, for the teams that miss out potentially, Tyler Toffoli is another name that is on the radar. Is there a significant amount of interest already in this player? Because with that expiring contract, you assume that there's probably a few teams that are kind of sniffing around seeing what the price is.
Well, there's definitely curiosity. You know, he's only 27 years old. I know the last couple seasons haven't been probably at the level that Tyler Toffoli would have expected and certainly the Kings would want. You know, sometimes that's situational too. I mean, let's face it, things as a whole have gone downhill for LA the last year and a half or so, and that's why they've entered a period here where they're kind of in the early stages of a rebuild. And, you know, the fact that his cap, it's only $4.6 million, that he is an expiring contract. I mean, I don't think that they'll have any trouble moving him. And you know, I don't know that they've totally committed to doing it just yet. I mean, that's the likely outcome here. But if you're in Rob Blake's shoes managing that team, I think you're counting on, you know, if not a bidding war, getting multiple bids the closer you wait till February to move a player like this. I mean, the reality is there's only so many teams right now in the market to make this kind of trade. And so, you know, I still think it's likely to happen later in the season. But I think he's an intriguing name because he's been productive in the past. He was part of the Kings Cup team in 2014. And he still isn't that old. And the commitment is a little bit less than you see for some other players with being an expiring deal. So, you know, I'd say we're at the point where teams are scouting the Kings closely. They're wanting to see his progression. You know, obviously Tyler Toffoli was a healthy scratch for a game last week, which isn't what you want to see, but you know, now it's about his response to that and you know, how well he's playing and to determine which teams sort of get in line when it comes time to bid on him and you know, see where his next home is.
Chris Johnson, our guest. The hockey world was buzzing after you and Elliot broke the Dustin Byfuglien news on headlines Saturday night, and it's going to be a pretty awkward situation moving forward. I think we can all agree on that, but do you see any way that this relationship can be repaired in the future?
I would say that's not likely. I mean, anything's possible. I mean, look, this isn't totally unprecedented. And the truth of the matter is, you know, once this matter is settled with what I assume will be a grievance, you know, Dustin Byfuglien will still be under contract to the Jets next year. And so, you know, there's the potential that they insist that he return there. And you know, he kind of has no other choice to do so other than not play. You know, I think it's a little too soon to say where this is headed longer term in terms of those types of things. But you know, in the moment, I think there's no hiding from the fact that this has become a bit contentious, that there's some bad feelings between the parties about the way things have happened here. And you know, but as I say, we've seen players have trade demands and then play three or four or five more seasons after that. I mean, it's happened in the sport where you can go through a rough point business-wise and still recover from it. But you know, I think, you know, in the meantime, Dustin Byfuglien, it doesn't sound like we'll be ready to play at least until, you know, maybe late February, March, maybe April, depending on, you know, how his ankle heals up after the independent surgery he had. You know, the grievance process will likely play out in the meantime, and we'll have to see where everyone's at that point. But, you know, remember, this is a guy that you know, is one of the few players remaining that came up from Atlanta when the team relocated to Winnipeg. He's got 8 seasons under his belt as a Jet, and so there's a relationship there between him and the owner, Mark Chipman, the GM, Kevin Cheveldayoff. And so, you know, there's a chance it can be salvaged. I would say that's probably not the most likely outcome given what's happened here in the last few months.
Before we let you go, CJ, we've had quite the debate stirring with our listeners as well on the Milan Lucic suspension, the 2 games he got for punching Cole Sherwood. It It was a surprise to see the two games to a certain extent. I agree with what the NHL eventually called on it, but it does feel like a bit precedent setting. What's your take on the whole situation?
Well, I mean, let's face it. If this was any old player, that might not have risen to that level. But I think that, you know, Milan Lucic's history, you know, comes into play here in terms of some previous suspensions and fines he's had for violent acts. And you know, I think that the league looked at this. You have a young player in Cole Sherwood, you know, is not that type of guy, playing one of his first NHL games, if not his first NHL game. And you have Lucic coming in and delivering a pretty heavy blow there. You know, I respect what Brad Treliving had to say, that the Flames, you know, want their players sticking up for each other, that they feel like the penalty on the ice was sufficient. But, you know, I don't mind the league stepping in on something like this. And, you know, in some ways it might sound counterintuitive, but, you know, George Parros having, you know, filled a certain job in the league, you know, when he played and now managing the Department of Player Safety, I just feel that, you know, he's got a correct temperature on these types of things. And we're just not seeing very many players punch each other in general, whether in consensual fights nowadays or in this case, you know, in retaliation to Sherwood poking at the David Rittich there in the Flames net. And so, you know, maybe it's precedent setting, but I think that this kind of action in general is on the decline in the league. It, you know, it is a statement about what's allowed and what isn't. And you know, I just think it's continuing the trend towards less and less fighting, less and less acceptable blows to the head. And you know, just personally, my opinion is I don't mind seeing a suspension for that act.
CJ, we always appreciate the time. We'll talk next week.
All right, boys. Talk to you next Monday.